Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I am honored to share the microphone with the most interesting entrepreneurs, authors, and speakers who have wonderful stories to share and who are excited to freely share their business wisdom, their tips, and actionable advice. In short, they are here and they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. Excuse me. And today I am chatting with America's crisis coach, Phaedra Koenig. Phaedra, did I say your last name properly?
No, it's actually Koenig, but it happens Koenig all the time.
Well, I live in the Deep South, and that's how we pronounced it, and I should have asked you. I'm so sorry, but we have it right
now.
No,
it's fine.
Okay. So Phaedra is determined. I know her as Phaedra. I've never worried about her last name, just so y'all know. So Phaedra is determined to shake people up about their mediocrity and stop living a half-life that is killing their spirit. It happens to us all. At some point, we know people that are in it right now. It's terrible. Known in pop culture as America's crisis coach, she shares stories of triumph and hope that make a lasting impact on people moving through their own crisis. Now, Phaedra is also a mental health professional, an author, a speaker, a podcaster, and a certified life coach. She works with men and women to help them manage the effects of life crisis, get back on their feet, and get the lives they deserve. And I saw this. This is a sentence that comes from another interview that I saw you do on YouTube. Strength comes from struggle, but can we learn the right lessons that will serve as our springboard to success and happiness in our lives? And that's the big question, isn't it? Good morning, Phaedra, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio.
Good morning.
Listen, we had a big talk the other day. I really wish we could have recorded it. I always do a pre-interview chat with people to see, you know, kind of what we're going to be talking about and make sure that we're a good fit, that we're going to get along on the radio. Honestly, I wish we had recorded that. It was one of the most fascinating chats I've had in a long time.
Oh, it was so fun. We became like instant best girlfriends. It was amazing.
We've decided they were twins.
Yes, exactly. Where have you been?
I know. Listen, I want you to tell your story. You recently rebranded yourself in a big, big way, going from helping people go through divorces with their mind, their money, and their kids intact, tough on your best day. And the story behind your new direction is an important one, and one I believe will help our audience understand that they don't need to go through crisis alone, and in fact, they shouldn't. Would you share a bit of your story with our audience?
Absolutely. So thank you for all those great introductions and awesome setups for who I am and where I've been and what I've been doing. But most recently, I went through my own personal crisis that was extraordinary, and it really set me back, and I had a really difficult time coping. And in 2008, the gentleman that I was dating and later married, he ended up convicted of a white-collar crime that he was accused of committing long before I ever knew him. And he fought against that for 6 years, and it was tumultuous, it was crazy, it made the national news, and it was gut-wrenching. And going through that required me to really dig deep to every skill set that I had ever acquired, and to also learn a whole bunch of new skill sets to get through it. But the thing that I learned in that is that I do have a great capacity to manage massive amounts of stress. And I didn't necessarily know that was a gift until it was pointed out to me by fellow entrepreneurs that were highly achieving and people who were watching me go through that situation with what they termed grace and ease. It didn't feel that way when I was being forged in the fire, But now that I look back on it, it definitely does. So for me, I had to walk in transparency, and I had to be present in this world in totality. And as America's Crisis or America's Divorce Coach, which is my first brand, there was this separation between what I was going through, how I was living, and my business. And I couldn't walk in both worlds. So I ended up rebranding, widening my niche just a bit, and helping people who are going through all sorts of crises. And it's been an excellent move for me. It's allowed me to show up powerfully. One of the things that we're going to talk about today is how hard it is to be living this half life where you're trying to show up powerfully in your career, and yet there are elements of your private life or your home life or your relationship that are not ideal and intact. And people think that we can compartmentalize that, that we can keep those things separate and be successful in one area when we're actually struggling in another. And the truth is, that is virtually impossible. And so now I spend my time helping businesses and individuals get through the worst times of their lives. It doesn't have to be something as traumatic as what I've gone through, but the same techniques and applications work no matter what version of crisis you're in, and to bridge that gap between our personal and our career.
Now, this didn't happen overnight for you, Phaedra. I remember from our conversation the other day, one thing that you said a minute ago, let me kind of step back a second, was that, you know, people were observing that you had dealt with this with grace and ease. Ease just pops out at me. It's like, whoa, it must have looked like that, but it couldn't have been. Because you told me your story the other day, and we talked for, what, an hour and a half, couple of hours? We were on the phone for quite a long time. And I remember thinking, I don't know that I could have done this, especially with grace and ease. You would have dragged me kicking and screaming backwards out of my house going, I don't want to go. You know, I'm just,
yeah.
But again, you don't know what's going to happen until you're faced with it. But there was a point in your story that you told me you were kind of curled in a fetal position licking the Nutella jar, basically.
Yes, I said I was in this fetal position. Wow. Yeah, I was in the fetal position in the corner getting Nutella out of the jar with my fingers. I mean, I literally had imploded because I didn't know what to do. And in my situation, there was a conviction, and with that brings what they call shame on you, which means there's this shame that's out there directed at you. And it doesn't matter if you deserve it. It doesn't matter what your role or is not. All that seems to matter is perception. And what I was living in through the media, through the people associated with everything, was nothing but negative. And so in my community, in my business life, everything, it felt as though it was just all bad. And I really absorbed that energy, and I made up in my head that I had no choices. So we start to make these choices in our heads, and one of those for me was suicide. It became one of the available choices. And it saddens me to say that because my background is all in psychology, and I've worked with thousands of people over a 22-year career who have been facing chronic mental illness or episodal depression and things like that. And I had never truly experienced it until I went through that situation. And I genuinely felt hopeless and helpless. And for me, the issue was something to that magnitude. I knew nobody who had ever gone through anything like that. So I had no peer group. I had no mentor. I had nobody that I could call that could genuinely empathize. There's lots of people who could pat me on the back and say, I don't know how you're doing it. I don't think I could do it. And so when you hear that repeatedly, I couldn't do this. I couldn't get through that. You're thinking, well, how can I get through that, right?
Right, and so, I just said it to you myself.
Yeah, yeah.
I see exactly where you're coming from.
Right, so it became very scary. Very, very scary. Now, of course, my faith plays a huge role in my ability to cope. And my faith actually grew from that experience. I wasn't raised in a certain belief system. I was actually raised by wolves, as I like to say. I mean, my first story, my platform for being who I was, is that I lived from the time I was 3 until I was 13 in a house of horrors. And I had a step-parent who sexually and emotionally and physically abused me for a decade. And that was kind of my platform. Like, I had grit and I rose above that. And I will tell you that the skill sets I learned as a child and a teen, and actually kind of coming through that and understanding and reframing it in my 20s and learning about that, that really was a platform that helped me get through this time of my life. But there were elements about it that I had never understood. I mean, this is stuff that you see. I don't know if you've ever heard of the show The Good Wife, but it was very similar to what Alicia Florrick had gone to. Well, I can't call Alicia Florrick and have a conversation about, hey, so what do we do when we're in this situation? So for me, it really came down to one thing. It's so cliche, but I decided that I needed to be the change that I needed in that moment. And that became my motto focus. It became the thing that I attached everything to and said, you know what? There wasn't anyone there for me, and I know that there are so many people out there going through what they consider a crisis. I'm not going to tell them that there's a, you know, a barometer or a measurement stick that actually says something's actually a crisis, but for them it is. And I believe that I can bring tools and opportunities and a safe place for them to ask questions and share their story. And by doing that, perhaps, you know, the Nutella cells for the world will go down. And the thought that suicide would be...
I hated it.
You tried it.
It's too sweet. I don't like sugar. I found it too sweet.
Yeah.
So if I have my crisis, I'll have to find another, I don't know, red beans and rice, maybe.
Another crutch. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So, and I just really wanted people to not see suicide as one of their available options. I mean, that really, really was the bottom line.
That just, when you said that, and I know you said it to me the other day, and I had the same visceral reaction when you said it just now as I did the other day. My stomach dropped, literally. I felt my stomach just go, oh, that is so, and here's what bothers me about this, Phaedra, and I don't know, and maybe this is something we'll need to talk about at another time, but it seems to me that people now, maybe it's the anonymity behind a keyboard, maybe it's that we just vomit everything all over Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn these days, but it just seems to me that people can be unspeakably cruel to other people without really knowing what is going on. And I don't understand that. I will never
understand that. Yeah, it's as social media and the ability to just get information and thoughts out there has expanded, so has the nature of some people. You know, it's kind of like they say money magnifies who you already are. If you're a jerk, you become a wealthy jerk. If you're a generous person, you'll become a generous, you know, wealthy person. It's the same thing with social media. If you're a jerk and you have a Twitter account, you're going to be a jerk on Twitter, and you get to hide behind, you know, the anonymity of the name. And it can be incredibly painful if you don't know who you are, if you don't have a community who knows, likes, and trusts you. And luckily, I had those things. I languished for about a year in self-pity and depression, but really it was because I didn't know what to do. It wasn't that I didn't want to do something different. I just literally didn't know what to do. So I ran out of, tools in my chest. And I just had to decide, okay, my job is to get more tools. That really is what it became. And then once I started, it wasn't to solve the problem. It was just to go get more tools. And then those things just started coming together. And I had to be open to whatever was going to be. I had to go through the cycle of grief. I had to get to the place of acceptance, which meant I had to go through bargaining and anger and depression. And once I got to the place of acceptance, then I was able to go out and get those tools, form those relationships, shed my preconceived ideas of how it should be, and lose that self-pity And then literally everything changed.
And that brings me to my next question. There's a question in the chat room from James Artrey. He says, I know there's no secret bullet, so to speak, but as a mental health professional, what have you seen personally that works best at getting people to stop looking at their past and start looking towards their future? And I think that's a great question.
That is a great question. I'll tell you, there's one word that will answer that, and that's validation. People stop looking at their past when they feel that somebody has hurt them. And oftentimes when someone who's hurt them that they respect and then gently and lovingly lets them know, aren't you ready to move forward? And use active listening so they truly intrinsically know that they've been heard. Now, that's setting aside anybody with a personality disorder or an organic mental health issue where that just may not be possible. But from just a generalized anxiety or a situational depression situation, it really is about validating them, having empathy, and letting them get it out. I remember the first time I told my story, I swear to you, my tongue felt 3 inches thick and my body would physically shake. And it was very, very hard. And I was very defensive because I just automatically thought people were going to just judge me. And so I wanted to just get all this language out, you know, to defend myself and tell my story. And now I tell my story as if it's a story. It's easy to tell. I'm unattached to what your reaction might be. I hope that you see the genuineness and the message that I'm trying to help people with. But if you don't, I'm at peace with that too. So people who are stuck in their story, it's because they haven't gotten past it. They haven't healed. They haven't been validated. And they don't really know yet that just them being on this earth is enough. They're still in that place of bargaining and justifying that despite whatever their past was, that they are worthy to be here.
I love what you said about not being attached to people's reactions. Listen, I have lived that way my whole life. And as you and I chatted the other day, I have been accused at various times of being cool, aloof, distant. I just don't care what you think. And you know why? Because it's not my business. It's not that I don't care about people as a person. I was born that way. And I guess I don't understand. I get a little impatient with other people, and this is one of my character flaws. When other people don't just shake it off, it's like, why do you care what people think? But unfortunately, people do.
Yeah, at
but
some point,
you
they
about
were...
You had to give that up at some point, and it's. I'm glad you did.
Yeah, and it comes in degrees, because I would say that I had your same mentality up until that point of life. I mean, I had come to terms with the fact that most of the people in the community I was raised in knew about my childhood. And that's a significant amount of time. I mean, it's all my developmental years, all the way up until high school. And I had gotten accustomed with the fact that people knew my dirty secrets, and I really didn't care. I think that we all feel a sense of bulletproofness until we're hit with such a magnitude, and perhaps you would be able to hold the line of your character trait all the way through. And I think that's fabulous. I think that you are going to be a voice for a lot of people to understand. They're going to want what you're having. You know, that's why we're here. I believe we're here so people can witness us walk through life and go, I want what she's having. I want what they're having. Because what attracts, you know, me to you is we have some very strong commonalities and like attracts like. But there are a lot of people who would not want to spend time with you or I. We might be too brash for them or too tough it up, tough love. Some people aren't attracted to that. So everybody...
I have no filters, so people have to be careful around me. If they get their little...
See, I don't.
They do not want to spend time with me.
Right, and see, I'm very comfortable with you. I appreciate that and like that about you. So that's how I look at it. Is we're here to be who we are, be authentic and genuine to ourselves. And in doing that, others will look at it and go, I want what she's having. And they will actually raise their bar trying to shift and mold their lifestyle and their character traits to match that. And I think it's a wonderful thing.
Okay, so how do I don't even know where to start with this. How do people process these really difficult and really painful events in life and just honestly pull up their panties and keep going on? Are there any steps that they can take, or is it a mindset? What would you tell people? Look, everybody's having a crisis of some time. One of my favorite things to say years ago, and I still say it every now and then, is look, stomp out whatever crisis is bothering you right now, because there's another one on the horizon. Get this mm-hmm. one out of the way. I mean, they don't stop coming, but you have to find a coping mechanism. And what would you tell people about finding a coping mechanism?
There's two things that I tell people. When they come to me, they're usually at their wit's end. People tend to follow me on social media for a very long time because they like my personality. I'm pretty snarky, I'm pretty funny, I'm pretty edgy. And they like that. They're entertained by me. And they don't necessarily think they're ever going to need my services, but boy, when something happens, and it inevitably will, I'm the first person they call, and they're ready. And what I tell them is we always start with grace. We always start with you need to give yourself whatever it is that you need. If you need to forgive yourself, if you need to cry, if you need to get pissed, whatever it is you need to do, we need to help you feed your own soul in this moment. So that is the number one thing. Get in touch with what it is you need and give it to yourself. Now, I don't want you to languish in that, because what if what you need is to get under the covers and not get out of bed? We can't have that, you know, in perpetuity. But meet your own need at that exact moment. And then I talk to them about the grief and loss cycle. And people usually equate that with death, which it is relatable to that. But actually, we go through a grief and loss cycle for virtually anything that falls short of what we wanted or expected out of life.
Right.
So
divorce is a big one. Losing a job is a big one.
Exactly. Exactly. So there's five stages. I'll just briefly touch on them. The very first stage is shocking disbelief. You know, you can't even believe that this is happening. The second one is bargaining, and that's when you're either bargaining with the person, say it's a divorce, please don't go, you know, please don't leave, or if you're a Christian, it could be, please God, you know, I'll do anything.
They're done there.
Kind of thing. Yeah. And
had
the
lots
third
of times
one,
with God, it's like, why aren't you listening to me? It's very upsetting.
It is. Yes. And then the third is anger, and that's when you're just pissed off, you know, you're in this place of, I cannot believe this is happening. It can be self-righteous anger. It can be righteous anger, but it is anger. The next step is what's interesting. People think this would be the first step, but it's actually near the end, and that is the depression. The depression is when you've been through the shock and disbelief. You've given up the bargaining. You've been as tantruming as you possibly can be, and you're starting to realize none of it is changing the situation. So that hopelessness and helplessness is setting in, that sadness. And that's so important, and so many people want to skip over that. But that is the dark before the dawn, because after depression comes acceptance. And acceptance is when we get to that place of, it is what it is, I can't change what has happened, but I want to move forward. And it's that want to move forward. Like I said, I wanted to get new tools. It was just a small little thing that I just realized, okay, I've run out of coping skills. I need to get new coping skills. And it helped me edge forward. So when people see the grief and loss cycle, they can actually see where they are on it. And it's almost like having a map, and you know, like with GPS or what have you, if you can see that you're almost there, somehow you feel like, okay, I can make it. I can make it. I'm almost there. So that is the main thing that helps people see that, okay, this actually is a process. And I will tell you, it's not one and done. You're not just going to move through the process and boom, life is going to get better. As a matter of fact, you might repeat it consistently, but once you can recognize intrinsically, oh, I'm in anger. Oh, wait, I'm in depression. That means acceptance is right around the corner. Oh my gosh, I'm bargaining. Okay, I need to stop doing that because that's not going to get me where I want to be. Then again, it's that self-awareness that says, okay, I know where I'm headed based on where I am. So that tends to be very, very helpful.
Now, you've spoken repeatedly about some of these tools. What are some of the new tools that you found?
Community was absolutely the biggest tool that I found. I have always given a lot of power to my independence and my self-reliance. And growing up, I became an acts of service, love language provider. I equated early on that when I did things pleasing for other people, it kept me safe. It got me rewards. It was a means to an end for me. So I grew up being very taking care of people, taking care of myself, not being needy, what I perceived as needy. And what I needed in my worst hour were actually people to come and speak truth over me, come and support me, come in and include me in things. And, you know, Denise, you and I are talking about our strong independence and introversion. Mm-hmm. So we don't have a high need level for engagement with other people.
No,
but
we're big introverts.
Yeah, and so I don't need that stimulation necessarily to feel entertained or to feel, I'm just very self-sustaining. But in those moments, I actually needed community. And there was a strong group of multiple six-figure women that I run around with, and they just, literally, I got a bouquet of flowers with a plane ticket, and they got together and got me a plane ticket and sent me off to visit with them, and we had wine, and I got to talk with intellectual women about my business, about my life, and they just reminded me who I was, and they helped me say, okay, let's make an action plan. Here are the next steps. And it took me about 6 months to really implement full on, but I actually did it. And I'm not going to say, oh, I wish I'd done it sooner, because I needed to go through the process the way that I did. But that community piece for me was vital.
And I have to ask this, did they reach out to you or did you reach out to them?
There was a combination. One thing about me is I don't do what I call face baiting, where I will put, gee, ain't it awful, as a Facebook post. And wait for
you
the
know, I unfriend those people. I just love them. That is just nonsense, and I don't play.
Yes. So I don't face bait. So in that respect, I have to reach out in some way if I'm going to get genuine, authentic reactions from people. So there were a couple of people that I did call and say, and prefaced it and said, look, I'm calling because I need to talk something out, and I may sound like a sniveling, you know, baby, but I'm asking permission to enter that space. And when you do that and you kind of preface it, it helps people prepare themselves to be supportive. So, yes, there were probably two people that I said, you know what, I think I'm at my wit's end. I think I've exhausted my coping skills and my capacity. And so they may have, started the phone tree after that and made it possible for us to get together. But it definitely was a collaboration.
And I wondered about that, because it is difficult for people like you and me, and we're not alone. This is not unusual that, you know, high-functioning workaholics who are introverts who, you know, seem to be at the top of the world, it's difficult for us to show any kind of weakness. It's just, I don't know about you, I'd almost rather be bit by a snake than show weakness. And I know that I have to. I know that I have to be far more vulnerable and approachable than I am. So I'm working on that. But how difficult was that for you?
Well, I think we make up in our head that it's a polarizing thing, that we're either super strong and independent or we're in the corner eating Nutella, you know, with our fingers. And I think that there's actually a spectrum. So for me, it wasn't that I went from I've got it all together to, you know, please come, you know, stop me from committing suicide. It was just actually saying, you know what, I'm at my wit's end. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I think that choosing the appropriate people to go to, I chose healthy, strong, entrepreneurial women. that weren't going to collude with me, that weren't going to say, yeah, I don't know, yeah, maybe you should. You know, I went to healthy, strong people who had the capacity to meet me where I was and weren't willing to let me stay there. So I think that strategy is very, very important. Don't just go to a group of people who are, you know, Debbie Downers that are going to say, yeah, oh my gosh, I know, oh gee, ain't it awful, and then it's just about commiserating. I was actually seeking change.
And see, I think that's probably, out of all I've heard from you, the most brilliant thing that you did. I mean, it's absolutely brilliant. Look, when you hear, I don't know about you, but once I've heard a friend talk ugly about her husband more than twice, and she hasn't done anything about it, I quit listening.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, really? You're going to complain and kvetch and moan about this poor schmuck? Talk to him. Don't talk to me about it. Or you don't like the marriage? Get out of it, but quit bitching about it. So I get what you mean about going to people who are simply not going to go, oh, poor Phaedra. Are you feeling okay today? Well, you let me know how you're doing. That does nobody any good at all.
No, and what I do for a living is call people out on their crap. You know, I have a high level of, hey, if you don't like where you are in control of that car. You can steer it a different way. And I, you know, it's interesting because I had that mentality going through what I had gone through in life previously. And then when I hit the mother load of crises for Phaedra, I realized, oh my gosh, you know, I need to walk the walk. So it was a self-awareness thing, but it did give me a level of empathy, but it also gave me a skill set to meet people at those highly critical times and still be effective. Because if your family member called you and their child just died unexpectedly or was murdered or something incredibly difficult, you may really lack the skills to help them stop that spiral, you know, that mental spiral into the abyss, right? Because you can't even perceive. And one of the things that's happened for me is I've now come into community with other survivors, and I call them badasses, because there is something about going through what I call a cataclysmic crisis and keeping your shit together. I'm sorry about if that word's not okay on the radio. Keeping it together.
Go for it.
Okay. That is amazing. You know, I have now networked with, like I said, women who their children were murdered, people who had lost their limbs in an avalanche, people who've been through being stabbed multiple times by an ex. I mean, cataclysmic stuff. And my stuff pales in comparison. And these people are badasses because they have grit. I mean, that is what it boiled down to for me. They have grit. And I love to talk to them and find out, you know, what was it when it all was boiled away? What was it that made you say, I'm moving forward?
And, you know, Phaedra, people listening to us can go, oh my gosh, I don't know how this really fits me because I haven't gone through any of these things. But let me tell you, I hear from people in my industry, one particular industry in particular, the virtual assistant industry, it's a cutthroat kind of a business. People are coming into it who are not prepared to be in it, and they're getting smacked around. And in some cases, you know, they're learning from it, some they're not. But you should hear some. I mean, these people really take it to heart, a lot of them, and it is a crisis for them. And I'm not taking anything away from them because it is a crisis. They're trying to build a business. They're being smacked around by their clients, or worse yet, their family, who most families, honest to goodness, most husbands actually are like, are you going to get a job? I mean, they just don't understand that your business building, there's a lot that goes, when you and I have talked about this, excuse me, there's a lot that goes on in the VA industry. So even if you haven't, and I'm speaking to the audience now, if you haven't gone through what Phaedra has gone through, but you're still in some kind of crisis mode, listen to what she's saying about how to get out of it. It's important, no matter if your crisis is immediate, whether it's something that you were dealing with that took place a while back, or you're just having a really bad time, take her action steps and put them to work.
I love what you're saying. I work with a lot of VAs, believe it or not. They end up contacting me, and here's a common thread that I see. A VA may get pushed back from a client who maybe is a type A personality and a real strong presence, and perhaps this VA is a subservient wife, right? So she has a real strong husband with a real strong personality, very high expectation. Oftentimes she's the mother of younger children, and the goal was for her to be able to make income from home. And that was really the drive, so she could have the best of everything. She could bring in income to be supportive or maybe have some independence, and then also to be able to be available for her children. But then people who want to charge more per hour as a VA, they tend to attract very successful, very quick action type of clients. And those clients have very high expectations, and they're not as easygoing, and they're not as, hey, okay, you know, get it to me when you want to get it to me. They have very high expectations. And the VA
those expectations.
Correct. So the VA comes to me and they're stressed because they're getting pressure from their husband. They feel like they don't have good boundaries with their client. They're caught because they feel like they're not as available to their children. And now, you know, they don't even know what they're going to make for dinner tonight, and the laundry's piled high, and they're just, you know, wanting to throw their hands up, and they don't want to go out and get the quote J-O-B, and they don't know what to do. But what's happened is they've tried to compartmentalize all that, and they haven't noticed that their personality traits, their proclivities, how they react to their relationships with their mom or their spouse or their children, all plays into that dynamic. And so it's no wonder that they can't set healthy boundaries with their clients. It's no wonder that they don't value or see themselves as business owners, and therefore don't want to invest in their own businesses, invest in their own education. They're caught in this like Sharknado kind of situation. And what I do is I help get back. I just peel back the curtain, and we get back down to those primary relationships, and then look at, okay, are you trying to be a business owner? You know, what ultimately is your goal? And then we start looking at it honestly, toughly, and then we see, what tools do you need? And then help them go get those tools and apply them. And once they start applying things, even inside their own home, it actually transfers and starts to work well in their businesses. And then they become that person who can command those very high VA fees, get those really high caliber clients, and also manage their families and their lives and their marriages.
And what you're saying is absolutely true, and we see it all the time. In the coaching that you do with VAs, I also coach VAs, I don't go deep down the way you do and get to, you know, the family stuff. I probably need to set up, in fact, I will set up a coaching zone with you where I can learn from you. But here's what I see, and I would love to hear this, and then we can move on to, you know, another topic. But I am finding, just from listening to and mentoring and coaching VAs, that the biggest pushback appears to come from within their home, from their husband. Has this been your experience?
I will say, as a devil's advocate, a lot of that is what they make up in their head, because they fear the success of it, or they fear applying what they need to do to have a successful business. Now, that's not to say that there aren't husbands out there with judgment and they say, you know, what do you even do all day, or what have you. But for the most part, it's really themselves, has been my experience, themselves, what we call transferring. So taking their own beliefs and what they make up in their head and transferring it out and saying it's their husband, or it's that, you know, that unreasonable client, or it's their children. It's really not. It's really about them and the boundaries and the self-worth and the willingness to do what they need to do to be whole and complete.
And thank you for that. See, I hadn't thought of it like that. You know, I listen to them, and my kind of response to it has always been, well, have you fully explained what it is that you do? because so many people simply do not understand what it is that we do. It's a tough industry, it really is. But I love what you said about, you know, finding out what it is that you're going to do, where you're going to build your business. And we had a big conversation in a Facebook group yesterday, a big conversation. We are not employees. We're not even close to being employees. We are entrepreneurs. We are business owners. And I think that's a big, big mental leap for a lot of people coming into the industry. They're coming from that employee attitude and having to make that leap to becoming a business owner, which is a big leap.
It is a big leap, and it's a hustle. You know, I wouldn't have a business if I didn't manage it, if I didn't market it, if I didn't put myself out there. What I see with a lot of VAs is that they are not taking care of themselves. They're not physically looking the way they would prefer. They're not intellectually where they think they need to be. And so they love the behind the scenes. They love being at home. They love just being a voice on Skype or words in an email. And when it comes to networking or actually going out and getting new clients and being the face of their business, they resist it so heavily. And then they wonder why they're not making, you know, the money that they thought that they were going to make.
There's certainly that. And then there's the other part that they don't want to, and this is a very broad day. So to our audience, please forgive me. This is a very broad subject here. But I find that a lot of people say, oh, I can't afford that. They need education. They need to learn Infusionsoft. They need to learn how to be in and out of WordPress. I mean, it's a very technical business. And they just, so I don't have the money. I don't have the clients. I can't afford to invest in myself. You know, I know what I would say. I would love to hear what you've got to say about that.
Number one, I agree with you about the word they. It is very broad, and we only have our client base to draw from. And so we've worked with certain types of clients with certain types of situations. So I'm making my referrals based on that. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I charge a lot to work with, you know, to work together, and I tell people that for the hour that you and I spend together, or if you do my whatever it takes package, I bring with that, you know, my bachelor's degree, every bit, every paper I ever wrote, my master's degree, every hour moment I spent getting my education, and 22 years working in mental health, social services, and family court services. I bring that to that hour. I have made that investment, and I have done that blood, sweat, and tears, work graveyards, and all that. And I know the value that that has. And I am constantly upping my game educationally. And I love what you said about Infusionsoft and nowadays lead pages. And, you know, it's always changing. And there is going to be resistance if you aren't up to speed with these new programs or ways of doing things from your high-level clients. They're going to want you to know that. They're not going to want to pay you to learn it. They're going to expect that you're going to invest in your own education, and you're going to up your cachet. So it's so vital that you see education in yourself as valuable, as, you know, you would want me to be educated if I was talking to you about your intricacies of your life. You would want to know that right. I really knew what I was doing.
Exactly. Listen, I'm at the high end as far as retainers go. I'm up there. And let me tell you something, I educate every day, weekends included. I actually block out times on the weekend where I can sit down. You know, I take Jeff Walker's course and Brandon Bouchard's course. You know, I just took a great course the other day on how to work in Canva. I take the weekends particularly, and I just immerse myself in them because I'm not answering the phone. I'm not having to do client work. And to me, that's like fun time. I'm like, oh, learn something new. You've got to do it. I mean, this year alone, I've spent probably $15,000 just on education for myself, and I'm already at the top. I don't care. I need to know these things.
Absolutely, and I would be attracted to you as a provider because in my mind, I wouldn't have to hold your hand. you wouldn't stop my momentum and the things that I need to look at and what I need to put my focus in, because you'd have my back and I wouldn't have to detract from what's going to make me more money so I can afford you.
Right, exactly right. And one thing that, virtual assistants or any service provider needs to understand is that they need to be able to clearly articulate their value proposition to themselves, to their clients, to their family and friends who may or may not understand what they're doing. You've got to understand what it is that you bring to the table, and you need to be able to say that in two sentences or less.
Oh, that is so true. And, you know, one thing that kind of went off in my head when we were talking is there, I love working from home, but I'll tell you something. I'm one of those people that is a neat freak. I love decorating. My home is dialed in. And I could easily have gotten up this morning. It's, you know, it was the 9 o'clock hour for me in California when we started. I could have easily just like literally rolled out of bed and gotten my headset and been present. But you know what? I was up, I was showered, I've got my makeup on. You know, I take pride in showing up for an audience. And what that does for me is there's that pride. I know I've got together. Literally, I can't tell you, I'm on Huffington Post a lot. They don't give me much notice. And that's video. So I could be sitting here literally and get an email, hey, can you be on, you know, at 2 o'clock Eastern and having a buzz. So by being prepared for opportunity, it really matters for me. You know, I love the fact that I could end our conversation right now. And if I wanted to, I could go, you know, put something in the oven. I could change out the laundry, that sort of thing. I love that element of my life. But I take it really, really seriously. And some people love the fact that they can just, you know, quote, make money in their PJs. But I think that it detracts from...
It does.
Yeah.
It really does. Did you ever, I have to ask you this, Phaedra, have you ever seen the TED Talk by Amy Cuddy?
No, but I will by the end of the day.
Amy Cuddy, C-U-D-D-Y. I believe she's a professor. Listen, have your hanky ready, because at the last 10 seconds, she will break your heart in a good way. But she talks largely about what you're talking about. You know, she does what she calls the Wonder Woman pose. You know, she stand up, you know, basically how you present yourself, even when you're alone, translates into how you answer the phone, how you get on the radio. Look, I'm like you. I did an hour's worth of prep this morning before we even get on the phone, even though I had talked to you for almost 2 hours the other day. I was reading your blog. I was listening to somebody else's interview with you on YouTube. I came prepared because what you've got to say is so fascinating. I didn't want to just kind of stumble into it and say, oh, well, you go ahead and talk. I'll just be right here. That's not how you do it. But look for that. I think it really beautifully explains what you just beautifully explained. But you're right.
Well, let me tell you this.
Time. Go ahead.
And let me tell you this. That's okay. But when I could tell by the things that you were saying that you had done that. And I was so impressed because it was like, whoa, you know, that was impressive to me. And it actually elevated your status with me. It's like, wow, she did some homework. That is thrilling. And when you are on multiple shows like I am, that sets you apart. That helps you stand out. You could call me tomorrow and say, hey, can I ask you a favor? You would go right to the top of the list because of that little nuance. And people who are savvy, they pick up on that. So those are the types of things that set you apart and make you a contender, you know? And those are the things that will help anybody who's a VA, do some research on your potential clients. Know something about them. I am so impressed when people reach out to me and solicit me for services, and they've looked at my blog, and they know my flavor, and they understand my message and who my market is. That is impressive. So as a VA, just doing that bit of research, you could actually handpick your clients versus having to wade through and hope that what you prefer comes along.
Exactly. And let's go back, because I have to. I'm compelled to go back to the working in your jammies thing. Drives me crazy. It does. And I hear it all the time. You know, people are very proud of rolling out of bed, brushing their teeth, and walking the dog, and then going to work. Look, you've got when I left the corporate world, let me tell you something. I skipped out of that building. I skipped down the street to my car. I bounced in my seat the whole way home, and I said, I will never, ever do that again. I, as of this moment, I am unemployable. And I went out of my way to make sure that I would never be employed in somebody else's stinking office again. And it took me 6 months. I mean, from the moment I made that decision, 6 months later, I was profitable. And I've been profitable every day since. But I see this all the time. You know, people, oh, you know, I can work in my jammies. Honey, you cannot give up taking care of you. You've got to have that healthy selfishness. You've got to take your Epsom salt baths. You need to do your body brushing. You need to do your exercising. You need to spend that quality time with your family. You can't just walk away from an office or a job and go, oh, well, I have a dry cleaning bill anymore. Let me tell you something. I'm like you. Right now I have on an ankle length maxi. I've got 4-inch stilettos on. And my hair is in a ponytail, which is the way I wear it, but I am dressed to kill. Am I going to leave my house today? Probably not. But I feel pretty. I feel good.
I get it. And you are a sister of my heart because I am rocking. I don't have the stilettos on. That's one thing that has changed. I'm super tall, but I do wear flats more than I ever have. Mm. But yeah, I'm in full makeup, you know, and that's part of my who I am. And you and I talked about that yesterday and about our brand, you know, and people think that I'm unapproachable when they see me on media or on my website. And I'm actually so approachable. But it is. It's about that self-pride and feeling it. It just, there's something magical about it.
Well, here's the thing, and I've done this. I've had days where, when I want you to tell your story that you told me the other day about being in Wisconsin, I think it was. But anyway, look, I've had days where, you know, I may have this massive web build that has to be launched at 4 o'clock in the morning. That has happened. My client was walking across the tarmac to go into, I think, Oprah. We had to launch it that morning. I mean, it just happens. So, I mean, you roll out of bed, pull your hair up in a ponytail. You do get your teeth brushed, but you're not doing much of anything else for 3 or 4 days. Let me tell you something. At the end of that few days, you look at yourself and go, you know, I'm not standing as straight as I was a few days ago. I'm not feeling so hot about myself right now. And you look in the mirror and your mouth is turned down and your skin is a little sallow. You look and you feel like crap. Listen to me, everybody. Take care of yourself. Take care of yourself, and your business will follow.
You know, I'll tell you, I didn't tell you this story yesterday, but what gave me my break in speaking, back in the day, I was an administrator for housing. So that meant that I had to have a certain license in order to be an administrator for people who were dependent adults. And part of that is your continuing education unit. So that means that you go away for like 40 hours once every 2 years and you get new education. So I went to this event and it happened to be in Lake Tahoe. Now, typically people would show up at those events because you're sitting on your bottom all day, you know, in PJs or yoga pants or comfort clothes or whatever. And I didn't. I showed up that first day, and I'll never forget it. I had on a navy skirt, red high heels, and a white blouse. And I think this was like in the summer. And I showed up, and I was just there as me, just doing my thing. And I was engaging. I asked questions. I answered questions. But I was put together. And at the end of that 40 hours, the company that ran the show came to me and asked me if I would consider becoming a trainer. And the next thing I knew, I was in Hawaii giving an all-day talk to over 300 people, all fully paid for. And I'll never forget that because it was because I showed up ready. An opportunity came, and I grabbed it. And that launched my speaking career. And that was just being in a skirt looking good.
And that's so important. I mean, you just never know when opportunity is going to come, whether it's going to come over the phone, whether it's going to be in person. You have to be prepared. And something I wanted to talk to you about, and I don't know that we'll have time today, is how do you weed out those opportunities? Because you're like me. Opportunity is coming all of the time. Sometimes we say yes. Sometimes we cannot. So how do you – maybe we've got about 5 minutes. How do you sort through those opportunities? I mean, do you have any kind of a, I don't know, mindset or a tool that you use to say, okay, this might be good for now, this might be good for later? I'm constantly sorting through them, constantly. And that's not a complaint. I am so proud that they come my way.
Oh, yes. In the beginning, I said yes to anything because I felt I was really well known on the West Coast, and I had a lot of brick and mortar type clients where it was just geographically I was well known, but I was, you know, essentially unknown on the internet. And so when I began about 3 or 4 years ago, I was saying yes to anything and everything just to get my personality out there. But now I am a lot more discerning because I'm getting multiple offers all the time. And I really have crafted, you know, what's my vision? Where am I headed? Who am I trying to attract? And making sure that I'm saying yes to the things that are going to bring me closer to my goals. And that's where, like you were saying, just to backtrack a little bit earlier, you know, that continuing education, I always have a coach myself. I'm always increasing, you know, I'm being invited into new higher echelon circles. So my sphere of influence and the people who are influencing me is always shifting and growing and moving upward. So that is helping me to, you know, decide where am I headed, what am I doing. So I'm investing in my own education, my own marketing, my own thing, just like you are, doing it for fun, doing it out of necessity. And that helps me know where I'm trying to go. And it helps me, I won't do something unless it's a hell yes. I'm far enough in my career now that that's my barometer.
And see, that is brilliant. One of the things that I hear quite a bit, and you may, you know, when you're coaching people or wanting to coach people, is, oh, I can't afford it. I will tell people, look, you can go through your budget, and I'm not saying you need to hire me or you need to hire Phaedra, but you need a coach, you need a mentor. If nothing else, get in a group of like-minded people. Find a way to work with people in your niche or your niche, however you want to pronounce it, but find those people. But I'll tell people, look, if you go through your monthly budget, I went through my budget, Pedro, about a year ago, and I cut out $1,300 worth of crap.
Yes.
$1,300. And part of that was cable. You know, I don't like that stuff, and I don't watch enough TV to support that, and I don't like the garbage they bring into my living room. I mean, $1,300, I was mad. I was like, you've been paying this much. Some of it's just stuff that you might have signed up for a little membership site. It's $19 a month or $37, and it's just gone on and on and on, and you haven't logged into that site for a year. Lose it. If you want to find coaching, if you want to find mentors, you can find it in your budget if it's important enough for you to move your business forward, right?
It is so true. That's exactly what happened with me when everything was really falling apart. I had to get really, really honest about my own budget. And that I didn't want, you know, like you said, I had become virtually unemployable, not through no fault of my own, but then, you know, it became a lifestyle choice as well. And I did exactly what you just said. I cut off cable. I stopped buying magazines. I used to buy magazines. I say they were my date night. I would once a week go get all the new magazines, and I would, you know, just enjoy that time and cut that out. I made radical changes. I got very, very honest about what lit my fire. And to be honest, I go to Starbucks probably every day. That lights my fire. To somebody, that could be a total waste of money. But I don't waste money in other ways. And it freed me up. I pay very big money for my coaching, and it always pays off. I know we're running out of time, but I've learned something.
Okay.
And I think
We're going to stop streaming in about 53 seconds. So the people in the chat room, we will lose you, but you can come back and listen to it. But we're going to keep recording, so don't stop talking.
Excellent. Here's something that I learned about a year ago, and it was a game changer for me. So I'm hoping that your people stick with us and listen to the recording. So if you look at coaching as a scale of 1 to 10, number one coach being somebody who's so brand new, so green, doesn't know much about much, but they know a little bit about something. And then a level 10 is someone like you or I, Denise. You know, we've been doing this a long time. We've got this cachet of knowledge and power and business, and it's just phenomenal. Well, the one doesn't speak the language of a 10. The one can't even conceive choices and the finances that the 10 is talking about. And then there's everything in between. There's the 2, 3, 4, 5, and so on. A 1 is going to get coaching from a 3. It's enough of a stretch that they can hear the language, they can conceive that they could get there, they want what that person is having, but it's not so far out of reach that the 10, they just can't even conceive of it. And that 3 is getting their coaching from the 6, and they're coaching down to the 3, and so on and so forth. And I moved up through that scale, and I'm sure you did as well. There was a time where I only coach down to a 2, a 4, a 5. Now I am completely confident that if you and I work together, that it would be mutually gratifying. And I also know that I would get frustrated or bored or not enjoy working with a 1. You know, they wouldn't be able to make the changes that I could see for them because they're not speaking that language yet. So if you look at it like that, you know, try to reach up 2 levels and offer services down 2 levels. But ultimately, you're going to move through the grid. And that was really helpful for me.
Yeah, I've done that. Yeah, I've had business coaches for a number of years now. In fact, I'm actually needing a business coach right now. We do need to talk. but here's the thing. I have worked with, you know, business coaches who were great at what they did, but they did not understand my industry. That's bad. That's very, very bad, but I didn't know it at the time. Once I got through that coach and I went, well, I did learn some things. One of the things that I learned from a coach that I adored, but she did not get me as an introvert at all. I mean, not even close. Nor did she understand my industry, but I learned a lot from her. You know, what kind of life lessons that I can apply? One of the things that she asked me that still resonates with me today, and I coached with her 2 or 3 years ago now, I think, she was listening to me kind of rant about something, what we do. And she just very quietly asked me in her New Jersey accent. You can about understand me. Here I am with my little Southern accent, her with her New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't understand each other very well at all. But she was precious. But she said, Denise, what are you tolerating? Phaedra, that rocked me back on my heels. I went, what? And then I had to stop and really examine it. And I examined it for days on end. I remember some friends and I were going on a trip, and I remember sitting in the car. We were going to Atlanta, Georgia. That's a 10-hour drive. I sat there like a cow and chewed my cud for 10 hours wondering what in the heck I was tolerating. And let me tell you what, it was ugly when I realized what I was tolerating. And I got out a pad and a paper, and I started writing it all down.
Yes, and thank God. And, you know, that saying that when the student is ready, the teacher arrives.
Right.
I found that to be so powerful and so true. And I feel that way about my friends. I feel that way about meeting you, you know, a colleague, a friend that gets me and that is operating at a level. We speak the same language. I don't have to educate you about what I do for a living to have a just a really easy conversation. That's so powerful and comfortable. So, I mean, that's just a real value. And
well, and this is the reason I do this show, so I get to meet people like you. Look, I live in a small village in southwest Louisiana. I'm equidistant between Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. And as a high-functioning workaholic introvert, I don't get out much. That's on purpose. So this radio show allows me to meet the neatest people, people that I learn from, people that I can connect with, people who can share wisdom with my audience. I mean, how perfect is this?
Yes. Yes. No, I agree. I absolutely agree. And going back to my story, I can show up powerfully here with you because there is nothing going on in the back of my mind that says, oh, well, if she only knew your real story, Phaedra, she wouldn't like you. She wouldn't think you're all that. But the fact that I'm so comfortable in my situation, I get to show up with everything powerfully and be of service rather than make up in my head that I'm not good enough to be here right now.
So imposter syndrome, is that what we're talking about?
Mm-hmm. It is. It is.
Look, I catch myself doing that every now and then. One of the things, and I forgot to make this point, one of the things that I realized when I was making that list in that 10-hour drive, do you know who the worst offender was?
Me
too. Me.
Yeah.
I was the worst offender. I was like, really? I mean, I got good and busy after that, and I stopped talking. It, you know, it's easy to just say, oh, well, you know, my now former husband didn't mean to say that. Yeah, he did. Don't tolerate that anymore. Yeah, just silly things like that. But I got very honest with where I was and who I was. And once I kind of shed that, don't worry about it, you've got other things to do attitude, I got very focused. I mean, I've always mm-hmm. been focused, but I got hyper-focused after that. So I do know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and I'm sure that focus required you to look at some of your own characteristics, some of your ways of operating, some of how you showed up in the world. And it wasn't that you needed to learn a new marketing strategy. It was that you needed to learn to maybe behave differently or to let something go or to acquire something new.
Well, for me, a lot of it was letting go. You know, I tend to, it's not a matter of forgiving. I can do that, but I sure don't forget. And that mm-hmm. has been mm-hmm. a problem for me all my life. Now I'm just not forgetting it, but I'm putting it in a box in an attic. So I'm not looking at
mm-hmm.
it. It's like, yeah, done, mm-hmm. finished, bye-bye. And that took some mental toughness. It really did.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And sometimes you got to burn that box. Don't just leave it in the attic.
And, yeah, I've done that too. I've had bonfires before. Listen, where this has been fascinating, and I would love to have you come back again soon.
Thank you. I would
remember
love
I warned
that.
You about this. I warned you that I do this on the radio show, so you can't say no, Denise. This is boring. I don't want to come back.
I've had a blast. I've had an absolutely great time.
Wonderful. Phaedra, where can people find you on the web? I know you've got a podcast, and I know you've got this great website. Your blog's just honestly, some of them hurt my stomach. And some of them have me going, oh, my God, that's wonderful. Oh, quickly, tell the story about when you were out and about in another state and people recognized you.
So that was my
being
big
online.
This is the importance of being online. So I have had the benefit of being on Huffington Post Live numerous times. And I was over in Wisconsin with a friend after a weekend of personal development. It's a great program called Radical Leadership. And we were having some downtime afterwards, and we were looking for something fun to do. But, of course, I was just in my comfy clothes, you know. I'll never forget. I had on, like, camel pants and a white T-shirt and a jean jacket. And they happened to say, hey, it's the Kentucky Derby this weekend. You might want to go over to this hotel. They're going to have this great party. So we basically crashed this party where everybody is just dressed to the nines. The women are just statuesque. They're wearing these beautiful dresses. They all have fascinators on. They men look amazing. They're all dressed. And, of course, they're having this pre-derby party, which is mint juleps, all you can drink. And so people are just having a great time. And the event is over. Everybody's just kind of dispersing and doing their thing. And my friend and I are just people watching and just having a great time. And this woman that must have been 6'2" comes up to me in this beautiful dress and this beautiful fascinator and says, are you Phaedra? And my girlfriend looks at me and I look at her and I said, yes. And she starts going, oh my gosh. It was like celebrity to her. And she asked to take a picture with me and she's calling all her friends over. And she's like, this is Phaedra. And she does divorce stuff. And that was back before my rebrand. And it just really was amazing to me, the power and the reach that we have that we never, ever know. And again, I was wishing that I was wearing a fascinator and looked the part for those pictures. It's definitely a testimony to make sure you're dressed, you know, the way that
right.
you like to be if you're going to be on social
right.
media. But it was such an affirmation for me that I was impacting and making a difference and that my brand was working. So it was a great moment for me.
And that's the most important thing, isn't it? I mean, not just necessarily that you're being recognized, which is important because you do want people to know who you are and what you do, but just that you have impact.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
Absolutely.
I love that story. Well, listen, tell people really quickly where they can find you.
Yes, so you can go to americascrisiscoach.com. There's going to be a great video there that will give you a little bit of information about my story. And my blog is there. I am getting ready to launch my brand new podcast called Coming Out of the Fire. If you would like to, there is a freebie there on my website where you can print out the grief and loss cycle. So you can have your very own example that you can put on the wall and see where you are. Also, I have this great opportunity if you go to crisiscrusher.com. That will give you an amazing combination of videos, printouts, and different things about the grief loss cycle and about what it's like to go through crisis and the hero's journey, which is a wonderful story that maybe we could talk about on one of our upcoming calls together, Denise.
Crisis Crusher. I'm there. I didn't see this. See, I thought I knew everything on your site. I did not see
it. I only talk about this when I'm on shows, so it's kind of a little-known secret that if people hear me on a radio or podcast show, they find out about it.
It says, sometimes life sucks, but this will make it suck less, way less. I love it. I love it. Phaedra, you have been a phenomenal guest, and I'm so appreciative that you spent time with me here today. It's been wonderful chatting with you. And I know our audience enjoyed the takeaways as much as I did. And I suspect that this is going to be one of my most downloaded shows in, you know, recent months anyway.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And I'm so glad that we connected. And I know that you and I are sisters of the heart. And we're at the beginning of a long friendship.
I think so. Well, thank you. Listen, everybody, the show will be available for download in about an hour. And you can also find us in iTunes. Just type in our names. Denise Griffiths and Phaedra Koenig. Say it for me. Koenig.
Phaedra Koenig.
Koenig. I'm in the South. It's Koenig down here. And anyway, I will see everybody next week. Phaedra, thank you. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate this.
All right. Have a great day.
Thank you.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.